Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Food Network Obsessed. This is the podcast where we dish on all things food with your favorite chefs, food influencers, and Food Network stars. I'm your host, Jamie Sire, and today we have the newest star of the Food Network holiday movie on the podcast to talk about her Indian American heritage, representation in the industry, and what it was like to work on set with Duff Goldman. But just a quick note before we get to our guest, we will be taking a small break over the holidays, but we'll be back with new episodes on January 13th. All right. She is an actor and advocate known for her roles in The Good Place and now A Gingerbread Christmas on Discovery Plus. It's Tia Sirkar. Tia, welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing so well. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we are so excited to have you on and pumped to talk about your acting career and, of course, your latest film. But first, I must ask about your recent travels because I saw you spent your Thanksgiving in Peru, which is such an incredible country. How did this trip come about?
I actually just got back yesterday. So,
oh, wow.
It was amazing. How did it come about? I had a few days off, like, you know, obviously Thanksgiving break. And I thought, where can I go that doesn't require like a really, really long flight, like crossing an ocean? And mm-hmm. what can I fit into like a 10-day trip? And going to Peru and visiting Machu Picchu has always been super high on my bucket list. So I thought, what better time than now to just check that thing off? So I did it.
That's amazing. What was your favorite part from your time there?
Oh my gosh. I'm not just saying this because this is a Food Network podcast, but honestly, food was a big
so good.
Plus. I mean, like truly Machu Picchu is, it's hard to describe in words. I mean, I've obviously seen pictures and videos mm-hmm. and, you know, National Geographic, you know, specials or whatever my whole life, but it was almost like I had to pinch myself when I was there. Like I'm actually seeing this with my own eyes, and it's just every bit as incredible as you hope it will be and think it is. And the people are just so, so warm and like hospitable, and the food is so good. all good things.
All good things. I couldn't agree more. I actually went there after I got laid off from ESPN and a few years ago. And it was, I mean, people say it's life changing, but it's true. It really does take your breath away. It is stunning, you know, in more ways than one, like you said, and definitely the food was a highlight as well. And as I mentioned, you were there over Thanksgiving. So what was your Thanksgiving Day meal like?
Yeah, my Thanksgiving Day meal was a little different than normal, which was totally fine with me this time, you know, this year. What did I eat? I was in Cusco, for Thanksgiving Day. So we ate, you know, causa, which is like that for anyone that doesn't know, it's like a stacked, well, how do I describe causa? It's like mashed potatoes with like avocado and then something on top, which is either like raw fish tartare or chicken. And this particular one at a restaurant that if anyone ever goes to Cusco, please go eat at Morena. M-O-R-E-N-A. Oh,
so I think good. I ate there.
Oh
actually.
My God. It's like, it's on the square, like on the Plaza de Armas, and you're looking out at these amazing, it's like just a beautiful view, wonderful staff, and the food is like insane. So anyway, theirs just happens to be breaded and fried.
Even better.
Yeah. So causa ceviche, obviously I ate like my weight in ceviche on this trip. And chicha morada, which is like that purple corn drink.
Oh,
but this
right.
one had pisco in it. So, you know,
nice.
there are worse Thanksgiving meals than the one I had.
What was the favorite thing that you ate on this trip?
Gosh, I mean, potentially that deep, you know, breaded and fried causa.
Yeah, sounds pretty hard to top.
Oh, you know what? Between that meal at Morena, which was incredible, and we were in Lima, and, Lima, gosh, it's like, it feels like a world away from the Sacred Valley and Machu Picchu and Cusco, which is like in the Andes, and the food there is like very specific, like Andean food. And Lima's like almost feels not the city, not the way that it looks, but almost a touch like Los Angeles. Like it's on the waters, you know, has a very Pacific coastal feel and lots of seafood. And if anyone ever is in Lima, please go eat at La Picanteria.
Okay.
And like eat everything and drink a pisco sour. It comes in like this massive, it's like a goblet of pisco sour, which I don't like sours. I don't like whiskey sours. I don't like, but man.
No, you gotta have pisco sour when you're.
I drank a few, but this one was by far the best and like the best ceviche I've ever had.
Good.
Those are my Peru recs. La Picanteria in Lima and Morena in Cusco. I have more, but this isn't a Peru podcast, so we'll save.
We'll save that for another episode. No, it sounds like an amazing way to spend your Thanksgiving holiday. And speaking of celebrations, I know the Diwali was also fairly recent at the end of October. And I love what this Festival of Light represents, you know, the triumph of light over darkness, the human ability to overcome. What were your Diwali celebrations like growing up?
We're Indian. So I'm Indian. My parents are from India. And, I'm sure this is not relegated to South Asians, but like most of our holidays are, you know, revolve around food and eating, cooking, eating, sharing meals with family. And then Diwali specifically involves like lighting diyas, which are these like clay lamps, and you dip these like, we used cotton balls. I don't know what they used back for a millennia, but dipped in clarified butter, like in ghee, and that, and you light those, and it's, you know, it's sort of like, it's like the equivalent of like Christmas lights. It's really special and beautiful, and it represents like this beautiful idea, like you said, about good conquering evil and sort of like rebirth and overcoming obstacles. So it's a beautiful celebration.
How have you made those celebrations, you know, your own as an adult, you know, living away from home and trying to kind of keep those traditions alive?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's hard because I live far away from my family, unfortunately. I see them as much as I can. You know, we all love to travel. And so we still travel together as a family, which a lot of my friends think I'm crazy for doing. So we often will travel to see each other, or we will all go on like a big, you know, family trip over like the Christmas holidays or Thanksgiving holidays or whenever we can. But yeah, I mean, it's difficult because I don't really have like, I'm Indian and I'm specifically Bengali. My parents are from Calcutta. So culturally, ethnically, we're Bengali. And so I don't really have like a Bengali community that I'm necessarily a part of really here in California. And so, you know, it's kind of long distance or whenever, you know, I'm able to be with family for these types of things. But you know, you just do the best you can.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think all of us can relate to that for sure. You know, you mentioned your parents are from Calcutta. What do you remember about growing up, you know, your childhood and their culture and their traditions that they were, you know, trying to teach to you, but also, you know, obviously assimilate to your life in Texas as well?
Yeah, I mean, I feel really fortunate. I feel like super lucky that I feel like I can say I'm fully, wholly, no pun intended, bicultural. Like I was born and raised in Texas. I am Texan through and through. But then I also have like this whole, you know, I feel like my parents did a really great job of like not sort of keeping these two identities separate. Like I was able to sort of like be both at the same time and have always been. And it's not even something that I necessarily think about consciously. It's just that my parents are both professors. So they're really wonderful teachers and they've been my greatest teachers my whole life. And so that I feel truly fortunate for as well. And so like they've sort of taught me so much and given me so much perspective. Like I have one older sister and we grew up so far from our family. It was just, you know, our nuclear family in Texas. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, extended family sprinkled all over like the United States and Canada and the UK and Australia, and then a bunch in India, which we would see them sort of sporadically, like we would go visit every few years, but that's not really enough. Right. And so my parents did a really great job of sort of like sharing all kinds of, you know, not just information, but like cultural sort of practices. And we spoke, well, my mom would tell you that I speak terrible Bengali, but I understand Bengali perfectly. My sister and I both sort of, it goes in the same, like my parents speak Bengali and English to us. I hear them the same way. And then when it comes to like actually responding in Bengali, it takes me a little longer, but you know, fair. So I have my parents to thank for like how we were raised to proudly be both American and Indian and Texan and Bengali. And I don't even sort of, it's just sort of my identity. And it's so ingrained in me that I don't even sort of have to consciously think about it or try to balance them. They just are me. That's who I am.
I love that. What about food growing up? Like what was typical in your household? Was it very traditionally Indian or was it like you just kind of mentioned, like a mixture of all of these wonderful things?
I have to say, I mentioned feeling fortunate. I am so lucky. My mom, I know a lot of people are like, oh, my mom's a great cook. My mom is objectively an amazing, incredible, like world-class cook. She cooks everything. She cooks incredible Bengali food. You know, growing up, we ate all kinds of stuff. She would cook Chinese food. She'd cook Mediterranean food, Middle Eastern food, whatever we consider, you know, American food, Western food. We ate everything. Man, she's such an amazing cook. And I don't think I properly appreciated it until I got older and moved out on my own and had to make my own food. And I was like, oh, so I've just been eating like this really, really delicious, like excellent food my whole life. And I didn't know that wasn't normal. That's just not like a normal thing for everyone. So yeah, so I'm lucky enough to sort of, you know, we ate all kinds of cuisines and my mom's Bengali food specifically is just like amazing. And I wish I lived closer to her. So, I mean, for many reasons, so like I lived closer to my parents, but yeah, the food is definitely, my mom's food is definitely something that I miss.
What's your favorite thing that she makes?
Oh my gosh. That is really hard to narrow down because she makes like so many amazing dishes, but, okay. So Bengali food, we eat of like a wide variety of all kinds of vegetables, but we're very Calcutta. Bengal is on the Bay of Bengal and it's on, like the Ganges River runs through it. So we eat a ton of freshwater fish. We eat fish. Bengalis are sort of known for eating like tons of fish. So we eat freshwater fish. We eat seafood, which I love. It's probably like genetic. I'm genetically predisposed to loving seafood.
Loving seafood.
But my mom makes something, I don't know what to call it in English, but I guess in my family, we call it mustard shrimp, which sounds gross, but it's like a shrimp curry. The gravy, I guess you would call it, is made out of like mustard seeds and really spicy green chilies and like dried coconut, like shredded coconut. And oh my God, it's so good. I could eat it every day. And you eat it with rice, like with basmati rice. And I could eat that dish every day.
It sounds delicious. My stomach's growling for sure. Before we move on to your acting career, I do have one other question about you growing up in Texas. But I saw on your Instagram you were wearing a Giants jersey.
Oh my God.
What is that about?
I can't. Listen. I mean, that's like the only thing. I'm literally from Arlington, Texas, which is legit Cowboys play. Yeah, it's not okay. I know it. And my friends in Texas are like, how has this happened to you? Like, what went wrong? It's a long story. I don't know how this happened. I mean, I do know how it happened. Okay, it has to do with an ex-boyfriend. But I became a Giants fan. I sort of got pulled over to the dark side, I suppose. early 2000s. So it's not like I jumped on the bandwagon when they won the first Super Bowl that they won against the Patriots. I was already a legitimate fan, but you know, that relationship may have ended, but my relationship with the Giants never has.
You got to keep something from that relationship.
Absolutely.
So we'll do that. Well, we don't get, you know, a lot of actors on the show. So I am interested to dive into how you got into the industry. What was the moment where you kind of felt this spark in terms of performing and kind of loving that?
Great question. By the way, I also never get to do podcast or interviews about food. So I'm thrilled. Like I always end up talking about acting, but getting to talk about, it's like my favorite subject. So it's mutually beneficial. I started performing. I was a dancer first. I started dancing when I was maybe 2 and a half was my first dance dance performance. And I started taking musical theater classes and acting classes when I was maybe like 7 or 8. And I just was doing theater, like community theater and theater in school all throughout, like, you know, up through high school. And when I went to college, I went to the University of Texas in Austin, and I got 2 degrees. I got a theater and dance degree, and I got a business degree, which in hindsight, I didn't really have any business getting because I didn't know what I was doing. And I still, to this day, half my friends from college are like theater, you know, like artsy fartsy types. And then the other half are all like hedge fund analysts and investment bankers. And I have no idea what they do. And we took the same classes. I don't know what happened. But anyway, I started performing at a really young age and loved dancing and I loved acting. And I don't know. I mean, I think I sort of would, I don't know. I was probably the most annoying kid. I would like perform skits and like try and tell jokes at like family parties and try and make people laugh. And once I realized that like I had the ability to like entertain people and people, you know, I could get them to smile or laugh. And it felt so like just thrilling. And also it made me feel great. So I think, at some point I was like, this is what I want to do forever and ever if somebody lets me. So here I am.
Were your parents supportive or skeptical about this acting career choice?
Both. My parents are great. If you can't tell already, I'm like big fans of theirs. I feel really lucky that my, you know, people are like, ooh, you're Indian parent. And by the way, like my parents are not just like Indian immigrants. They're PhD professors. So it's like a double whammy of, you know, expectation.
Sure.
So, but they're also like very cosmopolitan people. And I don't think there was, and by the way, my mom like was a dancer. She was my first dance teacher and choreographer. She was an actor when she was younger, not professionally, but, you know, and same as me when I was younger, you know, she would perform, she performed her whole life basically through college. And so I get it from her, the performance bug. And I don't think that either of them had any issue with like my craft, like the craft of acting. I think, you know, especially for my dad, who is like a tip, like just very risk averse. I think the issue was like just this idea that like, I still think, you know, he still can't imagine, like doesn't cannot compute that, like, I never know what my next job's going to be or when or where. And, like, I think that was the most distressing thing to them, was just, like, the sort of instability or sort of unpredictability of my business. And, you know, my dad is he's an engineer. He's a professor, like a business professor. And so it's like A plus B has to equal C. If you're the best basketball player in the world, you're going to go and play in the NBA. And, you know, that's that. But that's not really how my business works. There's a lot of, like, unknown sort of, you know, parts to the equation. So I think they were worried about me, obviously, and they've always been supportive, thank goodness, and have never had any issue with, like, what I do. It's more just like they would rest easier if there was, like, less uncertainty involved in my industry.
Normal job with benefits. And,
correct.
You know,
and
contract.
A 401k.
Yeah, exactly. All those nice things
that
you give up when you pursue that avenue. You know, Michelle Obama once said, you can't be what you can't see. I'm curious if you struggled to find representation in the entertainment industry while you were growing up and having these aspirations to pursue acting.
Yes. Great question. Yeah. I mean, I, you know, was born and raised in Texas. I watched a lot of television and movies when I was a kid. I mean, my whole life. And yeah, I mean, I didn't see anyone. I grew up in the 90s and there was no one who looked like me or had, you know, came from the same background or anywhere sort of near me. I mean, like, the only representation we had in the 90s was Apu on The Simpsons, which is not great. Not great representation. Not necessarily positive, affirming representation for a young Indian girl that, you know, desperately wanted and could have really used seeing someone that looked like me on television or in the movies. And so, yeah, I mean, that was definitely, I think, difficult. Would have been really, I feel like, there was something missing. And so that probably was part of what drove me to do what I am doing. And I am happy to report that I think that that's definitely changing. The landscape is changing, but I still think we have a long way to go. But even in the time that I've been working in this industry, like, from the types of roles that were available to me when I first started working till now, I mean, there's been a huge shift. And you know, you've got shows like The Mindy Project and then Mindy Kaling shows like Never Have I Ever, which, you know, like features not just one, not two, but three South Asian women leads of that show. I mean, that would have been sort of unthinkable to like 15-year-old me. But how wonderful for teenage, you know, like young kids that get to see that on their TV screens. I'm envious, but I'm also thrilled that there's that sort of change is taking place and progress is being made. But of course, there's a long way to go.
Always. Yeah. I mean, but how does it feel knowing that perhaps, you know, now you are one of those people for these girls that are watching on TV and seeing somebody that looks like them?
Gosh, I guess I don't think about it that way. But yeah, that just gave me like some warm, fuzzy feelings when you said that. I did a photo shoot a few years ago with this super talented actress. Her name is Geraldine Viswanathan. She's Australian. She's so, so talented. We did a photo shoot in New York for this, for a South Asian fashion designer, Bibhu Mohapatra. And I remember meeting her and I'd seen her in a ton of things and thought she was super, super talented. And she said, hey, at the end of our shoot, we'd never met before. And she said, hey, I just wanted to tell you that when I was a kid, I watched 17 Again, which is a movie I did. One of the first movies I ever did. I said, and I saw you and I thought, oh, like you made me realize that a brown girl can be in the movies. And I was like, oh my God. First of all, that is one of the kindest things anyone's ever said to me. And second of all, I felt so old in that moment. I was like, wait, how old were you when you were
a
child?
Wait a minute.
But anyway, it was so kind. And it was one of the nicest things anyone's ever said to me. And I guess I don't think about it in those terms, but that is really just such a privilege if I get to be a part of that change.
Absolutely. Has there been a moment when you've kind of been able to pause and felt like you've made it, you know, like truly like fulfilled your dream that you had as, you know, a teenager?
No. No. Well, look, I mean, I guess part of me is I'm sort of a, I don't know. I think one thing about having like drive or ambition or whatever you want to call it, ambition sounds kind of like a gross word, but something that you have to even just like be able to survive in this industry, mm-hmm. you know, otherwise you just sort of like get eaten up and chewed up and spit out basically. But is that like, I shouldn't say you, but like, I don't ever feel like I can sort of sit back on my laurels and go like, oh, look at what I've accomplished. Like, no, I mean, I sort of, you know, I have a goal and it's like back maybe 6 or 7 years ago, I had certain things that I was like, oh, if I could just do this, or if I could just get to here, or if this could happen. But once those things happen, the goalposts moves, yep. you know, move, right? And so then it's like, okay, well, that was cool, but now it has to be this. And so for me, it's always like, I don't feel like I can sort of sit back and go feel like pleased with myself. I feel like I've always got to like try harder and do better. And there are more goals to pursue and hopefully achieve. And I think that's just how I'm wired.
Yeah. No, I think some of it has to do with like, you know, having to be wired that way in order to continue to kind of slug it out. You know, it's an entertainment industry is not for the faint of heart for sure. But yeah, I think everyone's hard on themselves too. And you want, you know, the next big thing is it. And then the next thing after that, and there's no end to it, right?
There's like no end. Yeah. But I mean, I think that just makes, that sounds exhausting, but truly I just feel like it just makes me strive for better and more and to be better and to grow and to progress in my craft and in my career. And so I don't see it as a bad thing. I feel like it just sort of is a fire that keeps me going.
When we come back, Tia tells us about her holiday movie, A Gingerbread Christmas, streaming now on Discovery Plus.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Your latest movie, A Gingerbread Christmas, is fabulous. I watched it the other night. We love a holiday movie, especially when it involves, you know, a bakery that needs saving, a big city girl. Of course, you have to have a love story.
Of like, course.
That's non-negotiable. How excited were you to be part of kind of a festive food-centric film?
I loved it. I don't think I've ever eaten so much in one movie in my life. And yeah, it was lovely. I clearly, if you can't tell by now, I love food and I love to eat. And so it was like a win-win for me.
How did you approach your character Hazel in the movie?
You know, she is dealing with loss. I don't know. I don't want to give any like spoil. It's not like a spoiler kind of movie, but sure. You know, she's dealing with personal loss that's quite recent, and so. And I don't think I'm giving anything away here, but her mother passed away recently and she hasn't been home since because it's too difficult. And they asked if I could use my own photos of my own actual mother in the film. And I was going to ask her permission. And then I thought, you know what? First of all, she'll say yes. And maybe it'll be like a neat surprise. So she actually didn't know that, you know, photos of us when I'm little make an appearance in the movie. And so, yeah, afterwards, my dad like called after they watched it and was like, well, that was such a pleasant surprise. Anyway, having like, you know, our house, Hazel and her dad's house has like photos of baby Tia, like baby me with my own actual mom, like all over it. And so it wasn't that hard to sort of put myself in that place. Yeah. Just thinking, you know, it was sort of easy to draw upon those emotions when I'm like looking at pictures of my mom, my actual mom.
Yeah. You kind of feel at home a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And then, you know, it wasn't so hard to like get into the holiday spirit when there was like delicious baked goods everywhere you looked, like every other scene I'm eating something delicious. So, you know, it wasn't a bad day at the office.
Yeah. I mean, so was the food actually like good on set? Because I've heard, you know, different things from different sets, like where it's like, oh no, those things were actually terrible to eat. We hated
yes.
them. But like,
that is, yeah, yeah. That is, I would say more often than not, the things you have to eat like for 37 takes are not things that you want to eat. But I am happy to report that in this movie, we had the most incredible food stylist. I don't know if that's the right term for her, but she and her team crafted these incredible gingerbread, I should say buildings. They're not all gingerbread houses. But everything you see in the movie, like all of those gingerbread houses that enter the competition, those are all actually edible.
Really?
Yes. I mean, they're insanely intricate and beautiful and like wonderfully executed. And she actually made most of the things that I like, most of the desserts and baked
pastries,
goods that are featured in the movie. And let me just tell you, they were all very delicious. So it made having to do take after take not so bad.
Well, I would expect, you know, nothing less for a Food Network / Discovery movie. But it's good to hear that the food tasted as good as it looked.
Oh, yes. I'll be the first to tell you that was great news for me.
Well, speaking of Food Network, how was it working with the ace of cakes himself, Duff Goldman?
Oh, my gosh. He's such a peach. I you know, he wasn't on set for too long. He's shooting and he like had to kind of like sneak away for a couple days. But he was such a champ and like, such a delight. Yeah.
Is there anything special about this movie that you're particularly like proud of?
Yes. I love Christmas movies and I feel like our Christmas, a gingerbread Christmas has, you know, the things that you want to see in a Christmas movie. It has, you know, family, it has a budding romance and a hunky dude in it. And, you know, all of those things that you're sort of like, you need, you know, like you need those boxes checked. Mm-hmm. But I feel like our movie also kind of has elements that I found wonderfully, like not just pleasantly, but wonderfully surprising. And, you know, we have like an LGBTQ couple and the story is centered around a South Asian family. You know, one of the contestants who becomes a friend of my character, Hazel's, is a brand new Muslim immigrant from Iran. And she enters the competition with a gingerbread mosque that, you know, is a mosque that was very dear to her when, you know, in her hometown where she's from in Iran. And so, I don't know, it's just sort of like feels representative of what, I don't know what America really does look like in 2022, and just that there are all kinds of people that don't necessarily always get represented in movies like this. And so I'm just thrilled that our movie sort of gives you a sort of broader picture of what a holiday movie can look like.
Yeah. And like we spoke about earlier, not the holiday movie that you grew up watching. You know, this is definitely more representative.
Yeah.
Of all people who like to watch holiday movies.
Totally.
Right?
And then to celebrate Christmas. Yeah.
Yeah,
totally.
Exactly. All right. Well, big question then. Could you hold your own in an actual gingerbread house competition?
Here's the thing. I love to cook and I don't suck at it. I feel like I can say I'm not my mom, but I love to cook and I'm a pretty good cook. I think I am not so into baking.
Same.
It's sort of too exact. Rigid for me. Yeah. I want to sort of embellish or sort of, you know, I don't know. I don't like all the rules. While I might be a good cook, I am not a craftsy person. So even if I could like bake the thing, assembling the thing would be not great for me.
All right. So you are not the architect that you play in the movie.
No, I would lose that competition.
All right. Well, I hope everybody watches A Gingerbread Christmas. It is a delight and a nice twist on the traditional holiday movie. We're going to finish things off with a little rapid fire round. And then we have one final question for you. All right. So favorite Food Network show.
When I first moved to LA, I knew nobody. I had no family here. I was like, just showed up one day all by myself. And this sounds really sad. It was not sad. I mean, maybe it was kind of sad, but I didn't know anyone. I didn't have any sort of job prospects at the time. I just sort of shown up by myself and didn't really have a lot to do. So I would watch Food Network every afternoon, right around lunchtime. I remember I would watch Giada De Laurentiis, and right after Giada, it was Barefoot Contessa. So literally every afternoon from
Power Hour, right there,
12 to 1, I would spend my early afternoon with Giada and Ina Garten, and that's how I spent.
I mean, that's a great afternoon in anyone's book, you know.
Yeah, it was great. They kept me company when I was sort of a sad little lonely brand new Angeleno that didn't know anyone yet and hadn't started working and meeting people, and so I would just spend. So yeah, Giada De Laurentiis and Ina Garten got me through a little rough patch when I first moved here.
I love that. All right. Favorite character you've played?
Oh, man. I am going to pick two. One is Vicky from The Good Place because she's just like a ridiculous, wonderful, absurd character who, you know, is an actual literal demon and just had the most like just ridiculous lines that were it was just a delicious role and so fun to play and just like the best dialogue on network television on that show. And then I would say Sabine Wren from Star Wars Rebels because, you know, it's hard to get, it doesn't get better than Star Wars.
Yeah. All right. You're invited to a potluck dinner. What are you bringing?
Oh, good question. Okay. If it is fall or winter, if it's cold outside, I have a recipe that I always make that sounds kind of crazy to some people, but it's actually so delicious. It's like a pasta dish with spicy Italian sausage and pumpkin puree and cream and Parmesan cheese and sage. And it's just like a lot of crushed red pepper flakes. And
it's like fall in a dish.
Autumnal. Yeah, it's like it's comforting, but it's also kind of just like a little twist because you've got the pumpkin puree instead of like, you know, like a heavy cream sauce. Mm-hmm. It's delicious. So that's what I would bring. If it's cold and if it's warm, I have this, it's like kind of my go-to for like summer dinner parties. It's like it's actually vegan. It's a vegan succotash dish that has like, it's cooked with coconut oil, but it's lima beans, cherry tomatoes. What else goes in this? Zucchini, chives, lemon juice. I'm forgetting some main things. I feel like there's more. Anyway, it's delicious. Oh, corn, like fresh corn.
Oh, sure.
Cut off the ears. Cut off the ears. That sounds wild. I'm talking about corn. Okay, just for the record. Yeah, it's really good. And and it's vegan. So that's like a plus.
Yeah,
it's healthy, but delicious.
It's a crowd pleaser.
Yes.
TV show that you're loving right now.
Oh, gosh. Okay, I recently binged The Bear.
Yes.
so fast it almost made my head spin. I was like, how many days, like, did I take 3 days to binge a whole show? It's so good. It's so good. And of course, that's also food centric. And what else am I watching? Oh, I'm watching The White Lotus season two right now, which, you know, is set in Sicily, which I want to go to so badly. It's so high on my list. And I, you know, of course, like another place that I just want to like eat my way through that place.
I need to watch season two. I watched season one, but I have not.
Season two is good. Okay. I'm not totally caught up yet because I've been in Peru, but I plan to get caught up soon.
All right. Best and worst parts of your job.
Oh, well, the best part of my job is that it's my literal dream job and I get to actually do it, which is sort of hard to even believe sometimes. And, you know, like I love people and my job is, I mean, literally centers around interacting with people. So, and I love to travel. And so my job, you know, affords me getting to travel for work. Sometimes that's also the worst part of my job, because depending on where you are and how long you're there and if you're there by yourself and, you know, maybe that can be a little taxing. But honestly, it's just it is a dream come true that I get to do this for real for my, you know, livelihood. And worst part about my job, maybe that we work long hours. Like, you know, there might be like a 17, 18 hour day, but it's like, sorry. So you're doing the thing, the only thing you want to do in life, or are you uncomfortable? Has it been too long? Like you've been sitting in your trailer for too long. Like every time that there's something that maybe I get like a little sort of frustrated by, if I'm like, they called me in at 5 a.m. and it's now 1 p.m. and I haven't even worked yet and they didn't need to. I'm like, Tia, take a step back and consider that you're still here and you're still doing it. What are you really upset about? And so I just have to kind of put things into perspective. I can't complain.
How would your friends describe you in one word?
Oh my gosh, have you noticed that I don't use one word for anything? One word. Hopefully, I don't know. I hope kind. I mean, kind.
That's a good word. Yeah.
And maybe adventurous. Okay. I'd like to think that about me. Yes, I'd like two words. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. And then last rapid fire question. What does this time of year and the holidays mean to you?
Oh, gosh. I mean, my family, like getting to be with my loved ones wherever we are, whether it's like visiting each other where we live or going off somewhere far away and going on an adventure together, just like spending time with my family and cooking, eating, just like quality time with those guys, since we're all sort of spread apart. These are the holidays are like when we actually make it a point to all be together. And that's really special.
Mm, love that. All right. So the final question is not rapid fire. It is, we want to know,
because I've made none of them rapid fire.
That's okay. What would be on the menu for your perfect food day? So, you know, we want you to take us through what you're eating for breakfast, lunch, dinner, dessert. You can throw snacks in there if you want. There are no rules, so calories don't count. You can travel, time travel. Anyone can prepare these meals. There are no rules. It's just like your ideal meals for each of those.
Oh, gosh. Well, clearly... how do I even narrow this down? Okay. So for breakfast, mine will probably involve some travel as well.
Sure,
travel and food are my two passions in life. And combining them, especially. Okay. So like quite literally the greatest brunch of my life. And I live in LA. Like we love brunch here, but the greatest brunch of my life is at the most beautiful hotel, which is in Bali, where I got to stay. It's called the Mulia. If you ever get a chance to stay at the Mulia, please do. And please have that brunch. It's like, it puts those, you know, those like Vegas brunch buffets to shame. Like it's just this massive room, beautiful spread of like every, and I like sweet things, but I don't necessarily want like, I want savory things in the morning. Mm-hmm. I'm like happy if someone wants to share some of their French toast with me, but I want to eat
like a table food. French toast.
Yeah. A table French toast. Yeah. A French toast for the table. But it was, I mean, there, it's just like massive spread. There's like like Indonesian food. There's like a whole section of noodles. There's brunch thing, you know, what we could like eggs and all that stuff. Then there's like a sushi section.
Wow.
Yeah. Sushi from, yeah.
Give me some.
Yeah. And then I had never had this before. It's maybe you know it. It's called Kaya toast, which Kaya, I guess, is like a, forgive me if anyone's listening and I'm wrong, but it's like a sort of coconut paste kind of thing.
Okay.
And it's, you put it on this like brioche bread toast and like there can be like a fried egg on top.
Okay.
And it's like a little bit sweet, a little bit savory. And oh my God. Oh my God. So good. So anyway, that's my breakfast.
Yeah.
Lunch. Oh, okay. I know my favorite lunch. My lunch, we would mosey on from Bali to Mexico City.
Love.
At my favorite restaurant in Mexico City. One of it's called Contramar.
Yes,
and it's just like
it's so
just
good.
Like the most delicious food. Have you had the tostadas?
Yes, the tuna.
Oh my God.
That's the thing you have to get.
Yeah, yeah. The tuna tostadas. And then off menu, you can actually ask for them to split your tuna tostada order in half and do half tuna tostada, half crab tostada.
Ooh.
So for the next time you're there.
Okay, a little inside.
Highly recommend.
Tip.
Yeah.
I love that.
So yeah, like lunch at Contramar and then dinner. Gosh. This is hard for me because I just love food, like a wide variety of food. Okay, I'm going to split it up. Some of it would be my mom's Bengali food.
Of course.
Because it's just the best. Maybe some of that shrimp curry that I mentioned earlier. She also makes like bomb. We eat goat meat curry and it's just hers is like the best. All right. I'm going to stop touting my mom's food because it's not like any that helps anyone else. At least Contramar people can go to. I'm going to throw some Texas barbecue in there.
Of course.
Because, you know, I have to. I would say Austin either. Yes, Franklin's, of course, but La Barbecue.
I love La Barbecue.
La Barbecue is the best.
And it's woman-owned, too.
I know, yeah. And maybe I'll throw Terry Black's in there as well.
Okay.
Oh, and since we're talking about Austin, my favorite restaurant, Uchi or Uchiko, their sister restaurant. Sushi, Japanese food, but like very sort of unusual dishes. Okay, I'm going to stop because I feel like I could just keep going.
No, I love it.
You said I could go anywhere.
I know. So like now I know. Really, I said like, there's no rules.
My brain is like all over the place. And then dessert. Gosh, what's the best? I can't. Well, now my brain can't think of a great dessert. Something with chocolate. Something. It doesn't even have to be chocolate. I just love dessert in general. That's not really helpful, is it?
you could have like a dessert. Yeah, like a dessert. Buffet or something.
Yeah, maybe like a Jose, you know, maybe a Jose Andres dessert.
Okay.
I've never been disappointed eating dessert at any of his restaurants that I've been to. So that's not very specific, but
that's all right.
That's my answer.
You don't know where you don't know what you're going to be feeling after you ate all of that food.
It's
so
true.
You don't know what you're going to be in the mood for.
It's
so
true.
I think leaving your options open is the way to go.
Yeah,
sure.
I don't want to paint myself into a corner.
Exactly. Well, this has been such a delight chatting with you about your career and, of course, your new Discovery Plus movie, which everybody should watch and get in the holiday spirit. And thank you so much for taking the time and best of luck with your career.
Thank you so much. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Once again, I encourage everyone to stream all of the new Discovery Plus original holiday movies. They just make you all warm and fuzzy inside. And make sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a thing. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review. We love it when you do that. That's all for now. We'll catch you foodies after the holidays. We'll be back with new episodes on January 13th.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.